His name is Flint, and in a famous photograph, he reaches out with tiny fingers to a woman who's been observing him for many weeks. Now, Flint is a chimpanzee, and the woman is Jane Goodall, the British scientist and environmentalist who in the 1960s changed the way we understand primates. 50 years after that first contact, Jane Goodall is a United Nations messenger of peace. She fears that the wars over religion and resources could wipe out the animals that she's devoted her life to saving. The chimpanzee population, by the way, has fallen 90% in the past 100 years. But humanity is also endangered by the conflicts of our own making. So to mark the UN International Day of Peace, I asked Dame Jane Goodall why the threat to animals is a threat to us all.
The problem is that we're told from various different sources that it's not just the size of the population, but the unsustainable lifestyle of so many of us, and we're actually using up the natural resources at a faster rate than the planet can, you know, restore them. And so if we carry on as usual, and in fact it's getting worse as more countries become more economically successful, which is good in one way, but it's having this heavy demand on poor old Mother Nature.
And we're speaking on this International Day of Peace. To what extent do you think that overpopulation can be a threat to peace? Because I think you've seen in all your years in Africa the effects of overpopulation and war.
Yes, I certainly have. And of course, it's a mixture of the unsustainable lifestyle of many, and that includes the African elite. And then it's poverty, because if you're really poor, and so many people really are, then you have to cut down the last trees to desperately try and grow food or to make charcoal for sale to feed yourself and your family. So those two, as the population grows and as the Western world is moving in to take more and more of Africa's natural resources, and now particularly China from Asia, it's creating situations where, for example, Gombe National Park, where I've done my study, used to be part of a belt of forest curling round from East Africa to the West Coast. And now it's a collection of patches of forest, increasingly fragmented, with the only really large area left in the Congo Basin.
And what effect has that had, by the way, on the chimpanzee population, where you made your name, an international reputation as a scientist?
The chimp numbers, as you started off by saying, have plummeted, and in part it's very definitely habitat destruction as people and cattle move into the forest, and the forest turns to woodland and then farmland, and then usually the soils are so poor that when they lose the tree cover, they become increasingly infertile and finally more or less useless for farming. And in addition to that, there is hunting. There's the bushmeat trade, there's the commercial hunting of wild animals for food, so very different from the old subsistence hunting where people used to shoot just enough to feed themselves. And on top of that, a brand new demand for chimpanzees in entertainment, so circuses and advertising and pets. And again, coming now particularly from China.
That is an extraordinary thing. I want to talk about that in a moment. But if I could just ask you to recall, you experienced, as I recall, going back something like 50 years when you first went to Gombe, you experienced the nature of war, didn't you?
The war that we experienced was the genocide in Burundi, and there were refugees pouring past us along the lake in boats, and some of them inland. We certainly saw the effect of war. And also, I did again when I was in the DRC, Democratic Republic of Congo, where the army rebelled and they were shooting outside the window. So there's a lot of distress, and, you know, it's not helped by the fact that some of the African presidents became dictators. And basically, you know, one country gets good and peaceful, and then a new person comes to take over, as has happened in Tanzania, and things can get ropey.
Did that have an influence, Jane, on your concern for peace as much as it did, of course, on animal welfare, seeing this on two occasions at close quarters?
Well, yes. I mean, I think the thing is that what I've come to realise more and more is the interconnectedness of everything. So when people are in conflict areas or when there's unrest within the country, you know, they can't really concentrate on preserving the environment. They're concentrating on preserving their lives. So that peace is part of a whole flourishing, healthy ecosystem. And healthy ecosystem means an area where the wildlife and the environment can live in harmony with the people around it.
On the Religion and Ethics Report with Andrew West for this International Day of Peace, we're speaking with the internationally renowned scientist and conservationist, Jane Goodall. Jane, I recall reading that you yourself had witnessed brutality in the chimpanzee population. You were quite shocked by it. Forgive my naivety, but is it possible that that sort of brutality that you witnessed in the chimpanzee population is affected by the same environmental factors that produce human violence?
Certainly, to the extent that chimpanzees are highly territorial, and as their territories get encroached upon by human population growth, then of course you're going to see more interaction, brutal interactions between males of neighbouring communities because they get into contact with each other far more.
I want to ask, of course, now about the other major threat to the chimpanzee population, which, as we said, had fallen by 90%. I think in 1910 it was about 2 million. Today it's barely 200,000. And that is the use of chimpanzees for animal experimentation. I believe that recently you and Sir David Attenborough made a joint statement about the need to curb this experimentation on the chimpanzee population. How critical is this situation?
Well, it was very critical for chimpanzees, but fortunately, in almost all countries now, the use of chimpanzees per se has been discontinued, partly because it's very expensive, partly because of the protests of animal rights people, partly because most of that experimentation today isn't providing useful results. So they are our closest relatives, but they are different. And so you can't always rely on some medical procedure that is beneficial for chimps being beneficial for humans. But the statement that David and I made is more about the other primates, the monkeys, particularly the poor old rhesus monkeys.
Yeah.
And they are still used, and this is what we were protesting, particularly their use in neurological experiments, which involve extreme physical restraint. So their heads are put in the vise and they can't move. And they're deprived of water and sleep. And it's extremely painful to watch secretly filmed video of these horrendous experiments.
And to what end are those experiments?
Well, they are saying that that these primates' neurological experiments have been beneficial in helping science to understand diseases like Alzheimer's, for example. And I'm not enough of a scientist in that realm to actually know how much primate research this kind has contributed. I just pray it has contributed something to, you know, for all the suffering that it's induced.
Well, extraordinary suffering. I think I read recently of scientists actually implanting the heads of rhesus monkeys on the bodies of other monkeys.
That was done, once it was done with a chimpanzee, actually. It was done in South Africa with a chimpanzee just once. It's horrendous.
And Jane, if the threat isn't necessarily that horrendous in the sense that you said that the chimpanzee experimentations have abated a little, you still point out, as you did earlier, the renewed threat for chimpanzees as domestic animals. How much of a threat is this, especially chimpanzees becoming pets in China?
Yes, well, that was the case for the US and Europe, and we sort of managed to prevent that by stricter laws about importation of chimpanzees and their use. They're still used in entertainment, but at least they can't be imported from Africa. But in China and to some extent the Middle East as well, this is where now there's a whole new demand. So we finish it off in one part of the world and it springs up in another. So these battles never end.
There are, of course, ongoing battles, in inverted commas, about the purpose of zoos. Now, I believe that you have very mixed emotions about the role of the zoo, because in many parts of the world, the animals are destroyed when they cease to become an attraction. Is there a place for the zoo?
It depends on the zoo. I mean, there literally are zoos and zoos and zoos. And they're really good zoos with ethical standards who do commit to looking after animals even when they're old. So it's not always clear that they follow these, but at least the conditions in which the animals are kept have improved hugely, and they're given enriched lives, and the keepers are now educated people, and they care deeply about the different animals that they're looking after. We have one wonderful woman, Hilda Trez, and she goes around the world to really difficult places, like really, really bad zoos in Egypt and parts of Asia and parts of Latin America. And I think she's very brave, very caring, and she's made enormous differences. So she can't wave a wand and create a large enclosure, but she certainly can and does improve what goes on within the enclosure, like giving them lots to do, challenging them, giving them more things to climb and so forth. Those could make a very big difference.